Blog Talk Radio.
People make the world go round.
Blog Talk family, this is Leslie Gist. I'm your host of the Antique E Show. Tonight we have a great show scheduled for you. We have the author and historian, Mr. Jeremy Williams. He has written a book titled Detroit, the Black Bottom Community. It is published by Arcadia, a historically pictorial book publishing company. I highly recommend that you purchase this book, especially if you're from the Detroit area. I'll let Mr. Jeremy Williams introduce himself to the family. Mr. Williams, are you in?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Would you give our listeners an introduction of who you are and just a brief synopsis of what you're doing and how you got involved with this project?
My name is Jeremy Williams. I'm from Detroit. And I like Black Bottom. I grew up hearing about it, friends and family. And then when I went to college, it started as a history seminar with Richard Thomas at Michigan State. And it just kind of took off from there into further research after I left school. And I was just determined to do the story, do the book. And I think it was a good choice because people have always been wanting to for this book to happen, and I'm glad to be the one to do it.
Okay, and the term or description that you refer to, Black Bottom, can you tell us the history or the etymology of the word or the expression Black Bottom?
Black Bottom, one of the things that I learned when I was doing the book was how it got its name. And it really had nothing to do with black people. It was given by there's a debate on whether it was the French settlers or the Native Americans, but the name was given Black Bottom because of the rich, dark topsoil that the agriculturalists used, which is why they came to Detroit. One of the reasons they came to Detroit, and it was an agricultural society, as we know, and that's how I got the name, and it just kind of flourished from there. But it really didn't have anything to do with black people. The first inhabitants of the area were the European immigrants.
Okay, all right. And can you tell us a story about how the African Americans migrated to Detroit?
Well, black people had always been in this area called Black Bottom. They came as slaves. Some of them came on the trip, on the French expedition trip to Detroit, to the Detroit riverfront. But they were a really small group, just four or five here and there. Some were free, some were not. But it really started to take off in the ethnic sense, black people being in the area during World War I. Ford is offering $5 a day and word gets back to the South and people just started to come slowly. Blacks were starting to get hired into the auto industry, then everybody and their mama started coming from the South to work in the automobile industry. And then between World War One and World War Two, that's when you really began to see the rise of black people in Black Bottom. Whites started to move out of the area, and then blacks began to move in, and they settled.
Okay. If I come to, visit, I'm not from Detroit, I'm from New Jersey. Will I see any references of Black Bottom? Will I see any restaurants named Black Bottom?
There are, yes. You said restaurants and other namesake. Yeah, there's a bar called Black Bottom. There's a group called the Black Bottom Collective, I believe. And then there are some different bars and things of that nature that are still in the Black Bottom area. It's not there anymore because there's a park there. There's a Lafayette Park. There are buildings and apartments and the freeway. During the urban renewal movement, it was torn down and people moved out. So you won't find Black Bottom there anymore, but there are remnants, and there's a bar here and there, and there's a band, a funk group called, I think, the Black Bottom Collective. So people are still kind of trying to keep the memory of Black Bottom alive in one way or another.
Now, how large is Black Bottom? Is it about? How could you describe?
Well, it was located down on the Lower East Side, bounded by Woodward and John R., and you had Lafayette there, and then there was Jefferson. So it was a very small area, and it ran up the main thoroughfare, which was Hastings Street, which was what they called Paradise Valley. A lot of people get it confused, thinking that Black Bottom and Paradise Valley were the same, and it wasn't. Black Bottom was actually the residential area, and Paradise Valley was the commercial strip where you had the black businesses and some churches, and you had the prostitutes, the dope dealers, everything. And a lot of the famous entertainers of that time, Billie Holiday and Sammy Davis Jr. and Duke Ellington, they would all come in here not only to play at the clubs but to live and interact in Black Bottom, because, as you know, they couldn't go to the White Hotel. So it was really a contained area where black people lived and partied and just had a good time and struggled too.
Okay. So was it about how many blocks do you think Black Bottom covered?
Probably about 4 or 5 blocks wide and maybe 50 blocks long.
Wow.
Very small area. But in the beginning, I mean, Black Bottom, when it was when the Europeans lived in the area, then it was broken up into bits and pieces. I mean, I don't have we can't deal with a map, but it eventually, as black people moved in and white people moved out, it became more and more condensed into a black area.
Now, I heard you make reference to black people moving in and white people moving out. Throughout your studies, have you noticed that there were ever any integrated communities?
Black Bottom was integrated up until the First World War, where you see the auto industry booming and offering jobs. I mean, the Polish and the Italians and the Russians lived in relative harmony with black people. Black kids and white kids went to school together. The racism didn't really begin to emerge in that area until people started to fight for the jobs. The Polish and the Russians didn't want to compete with black people because they felt like, hey, these are black people. We shouldn't have to compete with them. And that's when you really start to see the emergence of real violent racism. And it was really over the whole job thing. Who are we going to who's going to work in these jobs? The Polish wanted their people, Russians wanted their people, and the Italians wanted their people, and then you had black people fighting for the jobs too. So it really wasn't it really didn't become a racial issue until, I would say, around the 1920s, 1915, 1920, where you began to see white people violently protesting black people in Black Bottom. And at this time, they're moving out, too.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I asked that question because I looked at some of the photographs you sent me, and
mm-hmm.
I noticed there were some pictures of blacks and whites living together.
Yeah.
Was this an affluent neighborhood?
Well,
relatively speaking?
I'm sorry?
Relatively speaking, you know, could you give us an idea?
At some time during that history, yeah, you know, you see the rise of a new black middle class. But during the early part of the 20th century, it was working class, but everybody was really trying to work and just maintain. Really, I wouldn't say affluent. I mean, you had a lot of people owning businesses, small businesses, especially the Italians and the Greeks and the Polish. Black people didn't really begin to own businesses significantly until the 30s, after the Depression.
Now, if I wanted to visit Black Bottom or Detroit in general, is there any museums or markers referencing?
Yes. There is a marker. There's recently a marker was erected in a park. I think they even named it a Paradise Valley Park, I believe. And they had a memorial service, and there's a plaque there. But and then you can go to the museums. You can go to the new Charles Wright African American Museum. They have put on Black Bottom displays and memorabilia and stuff like that. And you can just about go to any historical society there, and there's memorabilia on Black Bottom.
Will I be able to find any T-shirts about Black Bottom?
I believe the Detroit Writers Guild does have T-shirts.
Okay. All right. Now, I know you mentioned that you learned a lot about Black Bottom while you were studying. Did you
Yes.
learn anything about Black Bottom through any family tales or family folklore or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I interviewed a lot of people. Who actually lived in Black Bottom. I interviewed Billy Jimerson, for instance, who knew Coleman Young before he was Mayor Coleman Young, and she had a lot of interesting things to say about him when he was just a regular young cat hanging out in Black Bottom and shooting pool. But I interviewed a lot of people for the book, and my mom and dad actually went on their first date to the Flame Bar, which was a famous bar, and they saw Billie Holiday there. And then I had some neighbors that talked about Black Bottom. So the memory of Black Bottom is definitely still there, and I got to meet a lot of people. Of course, you're going to go to the archives, and you're going to go to the collections and learn a lot about Black Bottom. But really, just being out in a community, and once people knew that I was doing the book, people were calling me and emailing me, willing to invite me into their homes and talk about Black Bottom all day.
Okay. Now, did you YouTube these interviews or record them?
Well, I was – that's an interesting story behind the recording thing. I lost some of the recordings coming back in between Arizona and Detroit, and I had a car crash, and I did lose some of them, but not all of them. I didn't videotape anything, unfortunately, but I did get a lot of cassette recordings that I'll probably donate to Wayne State.
Okay, now Wayne State, is that the university that you graduated?
That's the university, and they hold a lot of Black Bottom research. The U of M, University of Michigan, I worked with them, and the Detroit Public Library, the Burton Historical Collection.
Now, how did your professor introduce Black Bottom? I'm just curious, you know, he walked into the
class,
Dr. Hall.
Yeah, that seminar was called African-American Detroit History, and, you know, at some point you have to do a research paper, a 25-page research paper, and at that point I really knew Once he gave me the green light to do anything I wanted, I already knew what I wanted to do. I was, again, at that point, I was curious about Black Bottom, and the more I read books and everything I could get my hands on, I knew I was going to do Black Bottom. Again, we did the small little seminar where we essentially just read books, different books on Black Bottom. Not Black Bottom, African-American Detroit history. There wasn't much on Black Bottom, which is why, again, why I decided to do the book, sort of like start the historiography on Black Bottom rather than just the general broad spectrum of African-American Detroit history. And that's where it started, really. But, again, just growing up, I had always heard about Black Bottom, Black Bottom, Black Bottom. And I didn't really understand where the area was until I was driving a cab many, many, many years ago, and the guy, he wanted me to take him over to Lafayette, and I don't know, we were just talking, cab talk, really, and he said, this is where Black Bottom used to be, and from that moment, it was like, wow, and then I entered college, and it just kind of took off from there.
Now, for some reason, Lou Rawls comes to mind, but I know he's from, his song is about Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a song about Black Bottom that you know of?
There is a song by Johnny Lee Hooker called Hastings Street, and I think there are a couple of more, but I don't know of any songs called Black Bottom, but I do know during the 20s or the 30s there was a dance called the Black Bottom. You can get on YouTube and Google that on YouTube or whatever, and you can see that video clip.
Wow. Okay. Now, you have several beautiful photographs here. Could you tell the audience how you acquired these photographs?
Just going to the collections, Wayne State, University of Michigan, and the Burton Historical Collections at the Detroit Public Library, and I sifted through thousands and thousands of pictures to choose what I thought were the pictures that would best represent what I was trying to say about Black Bottom. But there were just many, 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 many pictures. And I also sent out email or word of mouth to people, families who had saved pictures from, you know, their grandparents or whatever, or who had lived in Black Bottom. But I didn't get much of a response from there. Most of them came from the collection.
What is your favorite picture in the book, and why is it?
That's a difficult question because there are so many wonderful pictures. But there is one that is.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Which one comes to mind out of all the pictures?
There's one, and I think it's on my webpage, the first page, the index page of my website, where there is a group of black people and some children and men and women standing behind a gate, and it kind of looks like. Not necessarily they're in jail because it's outside, but it's got them barred, and that kind of speaks to just the sense of isolation of black people being forced into this area because of housing restriction and racism and discrimination. I think that's a pretty good picture when you think of Black Bottom and what people were dealing with during that time. I like that picture. I like the book cover too. The lady kind of leaning over the fence, talking to her neighbor, a domestic lady leaning over the fence talking to another domestic lady who was perhaps working next door. There are quite a few pictures. But I like the European. I like the first chapter deals with the European immigrants, and I like that chapter too because it makes the book not about black people but about Black Bottom. You know what I mean?
So
that's the first.
So when you said just now that these people were forced into Black Bottom and they were isolated, you're talking about all the residents throughout history that lived in Black Bottom.
Right. Right. Right.
Now.
Right.
Okay. Now,
go ahead.
What in your studies made you come or arrive at that conclusion that the people felt isolated? Like, you know, is there a
Well, we're dealing with the 20s and the 30s and the first half of the 20th century, where you're dealing with real serious racism in the housing industry, where, I mean, pointedly, white people just didn't want to live around black people. They didn't want to eat with them. They didn't want to work next to them. And so they were. That's how they were forced into the Black Bottom area. They couldn't live anywhere else. You know, you had a majority.
Okay. Then how do you think the immigrants, the European immigrants, found themselves in Black Bottom? Since, you know, you're saying that the blacks were forced. So
Because at some point they were discriminated against too by the higher class of white people who didn't want to live around them because they were immigrants and they were looked at as, you know, filthy, or they didn't know the language. They were, you know, rich white people didn't want to live around them, so they were pushed into the area first. But as they began to come up, climb the economic ladder and open businesses and learn the language and become acculturated and assimilated, then they were able to gain the status of being white. So they were able to move out, have more social mobility.
Did it ever happen to the Black Bottom residents? Were they ever able to climb out?
Yes. After around the 50s, I would say, black people, because at the same time the civil rights movement is happening and emerging and black people are gaining rights and they're fighting for their rights. They're fighting for the right, especially the middle class black people. They're fighting for the right to live wherever they want to live. They're getting educated and getting good jobs and making good money, and at some point they want to live where they want to live too. So around the 50s, they begin to move out of the Black Bottom community, which was probably not a good thing because with that, resources went. Black leaders left. And so that's part of the reason why Black Bottom was able to fall, because they had no political representation.
Okay, well, where did these upcoming and forward thinking people move to? What area?
The west side, the northwest side, northeast Detroit, northwest Detroit, Palmer Park, Sherwood Forest, Southfield, further east of Detroit.
Okay. So
go ahead.
Are there any names similar to Black Bottom that these communities have?
I'm sorry?
You have a town, you have the area that we're talking about right now is referred to as Black Bottom. When these people start to move out, African Americans, they moved to these various locations within Detroit. Did they take on different names similar to Black Bottom?
No.
Okay. All right. So if I wanted to find out where the Black Bottom people moved to, I could...
Well, you mean the upper class black people?
Right.
They just moved up into the general area of Detroit.
Okay. So there's no section that's known as top bottom or top
no.
something of that.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. That's a good assessment. Now, when we talk about Black Bottom, and I asked you earlier about how you obtained your research, and you mentioned your parents went on one of their first dates in Black Bottom.
Yeah.
Did they have any photographs?
No. No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay.
By the time I got to study in Black Bottom, my parents had passed. But, no, my mom just told me the story.
Oh, okay.
Of her and my father going to the Flame Bar, seeing Billie Holiday.
Okay, and the Flame Bar is not there anymore.
No. I came across a lot of people who had photos, and one of the interesting things that happened to me is I met one woman who had some really good photos, and I'd flown to Detroit to check them out, and she had, stacks and stacks of great photos of her family, well preserved. And at the last minute, for some reason, she didn't want to share them with me. And that was a really bad thing, but a few people were willing to talk about Black Bottom, but they didn't want the pictures to go in the book. I really didn't understand that.
Now, how did the meeting between you and the lady come about? How did you guys meet?
It's funny. we met on Black Planet. And when I went to her website on Black Planet, she had a blog talking about Black Bottom. I was like, great. And at this point, I think I was still doing the book proposal. I hadn't even got the contract yet. But I'm like, hey, I'm doing this book on Black Bottom, and I want to, what do you know about Black Bottom? We got to talking about it. I found out she had hundreds and hundreds of pictures that from her family. And I flew to Detroit, immediately stopped what I was doing, flew out there, and we met at, a Burger King or something, and we talked for an hour or two, and she brought the pictures, and it was like gold. I'm like, yes, I could have did the majority of my book with just the pictures she had. And I was under the impression I was going to get the pictures. And I don't know, by the end of the conversation, her whole attitude changed about it. She started saying, well, I can do my own Black Bottom book. And she was kind of leery because she thought it was going to be a book about her family. And that just wasn't the case. But that really, really disappointed me. And it disappointed me primarily because she is, I cannot say it because I don't want to blow her cover, right? But she's a researcher, and I felt like she should have understood the importance of the book. Do you know what I mean?
Was she the first person you met that really exhibited selfishness?
Yes.
In that manner?
She was, yes. Yep. And then I met a couple other people, again, older people who were willing to talk about it. But they didn't have the picture she did. I mean, she had just a wealth of pictures that were just premium shots, well-preserved. A lot of them were in plastic and just well-preserved. I couldn't believe it. She was sitting on a gold mine.
I had a similar incident while researching my project, and I just really want you to express the disappointment in how you felt. You know, where did you fly from?
What did I what?
Fly. You said you flew into...
I flew from Arizona. I stopped what I was doing. I talked to her. We were on Black Planet, and we immediately exchanged numbers. She sent me her number. We got to talking. We talked for at least an hour. I said, well, hey, I'm going to come out. And I wouldn't have flown. I wouldn't have stopped what I was doing and flown that far on such short notice, only to look at the pictures. I thought I was going to, you know, get a stack of pictures, a Xerox or whatever I had to do, digitize them or whatever. I wouldn't have even flown to look at some pictures, really. How old is she?
Yeah, you know, when you're mad, but how old?
She's 50. She was 50 then. This was maybe a year ago.
Oh, she's pretty young.
Yeah, but I mean, she had pictures from the turn of the century, early pictures in the 20s and the 30s.
So once you started the meeting, she decided that you were competition.
Well, here's what she started to say midway through the conversation, and I kind of sensed it, and I'm getting frustrated. I didn't want to get angry with her because I didn't want her to leave without us coming to some kind of mutual agreement, mutual understanding. But she just started quizzing me on my project, and then she started talking about money. Well, will I get paid, or I can do my own book, and I'm trying to tell her. Then she was concerned about whether it was going to be a book on her family, and I told her I don't even have to use the names of your family members. I just need the pictures to illustrate, really, what was going on in that area and how people were living, et cetera, et cetera. But she didn't understand none of that. And after a while, she said she wanted to donate some to Wayne State for them to digitize and put in their collection. I said, okay, fine. Then she started talking about a lawyer and things like that, and it just went haywire from that point.
Money was injected into the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Everything just went downhill.
And I just felt like maybe I was being selfish, but I just felt like, come on, we're historians here, we're researchers, and you should understand the importance of this project. And she wouldn't hear of it. She went to talking about, well, my lawyer is going to call you or give me your information. I'll pass it on to him. And what I really thought was interesting was she was willing to give them to the Wayne State collections to digitize for their collection. And I kept telling her, hey, okay, that's fine. That's great. That's wonderful. But let me go through them first and get what I want. Because once they go into an institution, you got to deal with institution, that could be pretty difficult to deal with too. So I was like, hey, just let me take what I need, which is why I came out here. And she wouldn't hear of it.
Okay.
I'm really trying not to put on full blast here.
No, well, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. I think that you should return to her, and you should give her an autographed copy of your book. And I
She may come to the book release party because it's down there in the Wayne State area, and she's pretty much affiliated with Wayne State. And I thought about sending her an email or whatever, but I don't know.
You should. At first I thought she was an elderly lady, because I've had problems with older people.
I had one elder lady. She was maybe around 80. Of course, she had lived in Black Bottom, and she invited me into her home, had a really good time. We talked, of course, and she took me into her basement and showed me pictures that were even hanging on the wall of her family, her grandparents. I mean, great, wonderful pictures. She's like, I'll give them to you. Just let me know when you want to Xerox them or copy them or whatever you need to do with them. I was in Detroit, of course, at the time, so I had to be quick in my actions, and I called her maybe 2 days later, and she didn't want to do it. I think it had a lot to do with her sister, because her sister was like, oh, we don't want to put our business out in the street. We don't want to share the picture. And she had told me that, but she was like, oh, don't worry about her. I'll take care of her. I called back 2 days later, ready to get the pictures en route to her house, and she didn't want to do it.
So how do you think this type of selfishness African Americans affect education and African American students today?
Well, it's difficult for those of us who are trying to produce our history. It's difficult because we just don't have the sources. When we go to the research institutions to do our research, it's not there because of that reason. Because people don't want to donate. They don't want to participate in the research process. They don't want to share. The most valuable thing to me is the source material, whether it's a document or a picture. The discussions are great and fine too, but it's also good or just as important if you can get the source material. And for
primary
me, that would
sources.
Have been the pictures, the primary sources, of course. And
do you think that what you went through with the difficulty of these individuals not wanting to share and locking you because of money, do you think that historically speaking, researchers and historians have met the same sort of resistance, and that may have something to do with our lack of, as African Americans, being able to tell our story from our perspective?
Yes. One of the things, when I was doing the research on Black Bottom, you can go to the archives, man, and white people, they give it up. They donate those pictures or those documents, newspaper clippings or whatever. They donate it. They give it up. They'll invite you into their homes even and give you whatever they have because they believe in preserving their history like that. When I went to U of M and Wayne State, there was just a great abundance of white material, white people living in Detroit at all different times. But the book wasn't just about white people. It was the first chapter is dedicated to the early white settlers, but it was just difficult trying to get material from black people. I don't know. I think it's just some of, especially the older people, they're just working with that mentality where I don't want my business in the street.
Right.
That's what I got from it.
They'll
talk to you all day.
I don't know if you're a sensitive guy, but was it really painful? I know you flew there.
Of course I'm a sensitive guy. especially when it comes to something like that, when you're you know, trying to do this kind of project and you're trying to bring people on board and to share not just the stories, again, it's the pictures and the documents or letters, postcards or whatever they have, yeah, it's painful because at some point you want to, you know, you want to shake them, right? You want to be like, come on, now this is important.
You're right.
And you should, you.
I think the problem is that you're not Oprah. You're not Henry Louis Gates. And I think you're waiting for a big payday. And they just don't trust strangers. Like you said, if you go to a person from a different race, they're enthusiastic about having.
They're enthusiastic about it.
Like
the one
that deserves.
The one lady.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to make this point. Our interview is almost over. You believe that?
Wow.
I have a friend who is an archivist and a researcher, and he's white, and he goes around, and he works with Henry Louis Gates. And what he does is he actually appraises black literature and things of this nature, and he doesn't have a problem getting anything. So
well,
if I want something, I have to go through him. But go ahead.
Again, it's just, and I mentioned this somewhere. I don't know where I talked about this with somebody else. There's just something, I don't know, mystical about a white face that comes to a black person and says, hey, I want to do this, especially if you've done a book about history. And it's a different reaction, I think. The one lady, when I met her, flew out to Detroit, and we sitting in Burger King talking. She grilled me. She almost wanted my DNA because I don't know. I tried to give her all the credentials I could. I think I even gave her a CV. I emailed to her before I arrived in Detroit. She wanted everything, and which, fine. I was willing to do that. She wanted the name of my editor at Arcadia. And I'm thinking, okay, great, I'll give you whatever you want, whatever it takes for me to get the picture. But in the end, she did not give me the picture. Then I walked out of Burger King and stood there for a minute thinking, I want to go back in here and give her a piece of my mind. But I couldn't do that. Yeah. And I walked out of there empty-handed. But I think it is easier for white people when you're dealing with black people, especially on these kind of issues, it's just a different reaction.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, maybe we need to bring some of our white friends with us when we are going to meet these individuals. I'm a little bitter myself, as you can hear. But you know, I try to keep the faith and be strong, keep it moving, as we say, and move on to the next person. Our interview is almost over. So before it is over, I want you to give all of your contact information as slow as possible and as clear as you can so that all the listeners can get in contact with you.
Well, the best way to get in contact with me is through my website, Push Nevada, www.pushnevada.com, and that's Nevada with an H, P-U-S-H-N-E-V-A-H, Nevada with an H, NEVAHDA.com. And is my phone number, address, everything is there. You can get in touch with me right away.
I will
be having a book release party on November the 7th on a Saturday at Cass Cafe down on Wayne State Campus on Cass Street. And that information is on my website, too.
Excellent. Now, I'm upset about what happened with your photograph, but I think there's something that could be salvaged between you and the lady.
You know what? I was still able to do a good book, and because when that closed down between me and her, I was able to look in other places and found even better material. So
okay, because she's so young, she's only 50 years old, I think that there's enough room for the two of you to meet and do a different project. I think she may need some guidance from you, and now that you're, you know, that you're legitimized with the book and the release party, I think uh-huh. we have, look at you in a totally different light, especially if you have other people around you of different hues.
I got to get some. I got to get some white validation. I get a white friend and like keep them in my pocket, right?
Yes, and invite her to your book signing, your releases, and I think what she has is worthwhile. I think we should put our feelings to the side if possible, because when we're long and gone, you know, when we're dead and long gone, those pictures should be passed on.
Sure.
To the African American legacy. Yeah, that's the theme of this show, is to preserve it. So I think we can't end the show on a better note by you making a promise that you're going to contact that lady and reach out to her and continue to get her on the show, on this show. I want the two of you on this show within a year.
Okay.
Can you do that? Because this
yeah,
is
I can. Well, now I'm going to shoot her an email, right, and invite her. Sure, I will. Because she's very knowledgeable, and she's very active in the community, and she does a lot of outreach to the black community, and she's very pro-black and all of that. And, again, that's why I was kind of shocked when she turned me down in the end. I mean, she's very, you know, progressive in black affairs. And, again, that's why I was shocked. Matter of fact, I went to her office to talk to her about it to see if I could convince her some more, and it was like she almost threw me out of her office.
Whoa. Okay, well, I guess...
But I will invite her. I will invite her, sure.
Okay, invite her to stop by, come talk to me and you, because I had a much worse incident. I had a relative, a strange relative. I don't know the person until the research. Same identical situation. Flew down to South Carolina, arrived at the airport, called on a cell phone, and she just blasted out on the phone. So I'm not meeting you, and here I am in Columbia, South Carolina. So I think it happens to all of us. I call her maybe every 3 years, and I still haven't been able to break through that wall. So, you know, we don't really know what's going on until we actually talk to each other. And if you said she has that many pictures, if it's not this project, even if you can't do anything with her directly, if you could pass her on to somebody else who can do something, we have to get the story out there, because our students in the inner cities are not doing well because they don't see these images.
Right.
You know? And I appreciate your images. You know, they don't look downtrodden. They don't. The people, you know, you have a variety of types of images. But, you know, usually when we're depicted in books and things of that nature, we all look like we're on our last dime. And, you know, it's just a sad commentary. When we have an opportunity to show our history from our perspective, we have to put all of our differences aside and think about the children, how people will be affected in the future. So,
right.
I know that you are a bigger person in that, and we don't know what her issues are with you, but hopefully you two will resolve it. Your book, stated, is excellent. I don't think her pictures affected your way in any adverse manner. But go ahead, Mr. Jeremy.
Well, I do want to just say this. I remember her telling me, I'm in the process of giving she had stacks and stacks of photo books. I'm going to give some of them. They're in the process of being given to Wayne State for digitization. And I'm like, okay, great, cool. And I never found them. I did when I started to research looking for the images. I never found anything from the blank collection. So I don't know what she's doing. I don't know what she's doing with them. But since you mentioned it, I will give her a call. I will email her and see where she's at in that.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Williams. I will have you on again, not for Black History Month, but sooner.
Okay.
And I want to follow you and your books, all of them. And we have to talk again.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
kingdom come, Lord. Thy will be done, Lord. Down here